Buck coming near side. And away from Mangiapane. Second unit here. Ovechkin, he scores! Alex Ovechkin has 894! And the bench empties here at Capital One Arena! Ovechkin has reached the summit! He needs one more to go one step beyond! He has tied Wayne Gretzky for the most all-time in NHL history!
Why did we come back with the game with the tying goal?
You know,
why not the tweet record said Chase breaker?
The tweet said 895, and I spent like 5 minutes scrolling through the files looking
John's
for it.
John's call of 895. 894 was pretty good. John Walton is with us right now with the Caps and Carolina game one tonight at Capital One Arena at John Walton PXP, play-by-play on X on Twitter. You know, I think I asked Joe B. this on both of those goals. Did you prepare for those two moments as a play-by-play announcer? Did you know what you wanted to say? Did you have it scripted? Do we have John?
Hello?
I can't hear John.
Hello?
I got
Hello?
You now, John. Did you hear my question?
I did. I heard the whole thing. I'm not a scripted guy, but I will say, you know, with 894, with the one that was there just now, there wasn't anything there. I would be lying if I said it. I didn't give at least some consideration on 895 because it is this moment, you know what it's going to be. And there's so much in our sport that you don't know. Like when Kuznetsov scores against the Penguins in overtime, none of that is scripted, thought of, even the end of winning in Vegas in Game 5. You don't know they're coming back from a goal in the third period. It could have been a blowout. You could have been pontificating for 2 hours. I mean, there's a lot of different ways a game can go, so I've never been a guy to script anything. I will say for 895, I had thought a little bit. One of my dad's favorite players was Hank Aaron, and there was a little bit of, I think, I never really quite know how it's going to come out until it actually happens, but I had at least kind of considered that morning. You know, when he hit 715, it was something that was similar to that, and that was by design, and that was for two reasons. One was for my dad, and the other was for my broadcasting hero, who I was fortunate enough to work with many, many years ago when I worked for the Reds, in Marty Brenneman. And Marty's first day on the job, can you imagine this? Imagine what Joe or myself or either like Chris King with the Islanders or Kenny Albert, we all got to call it. Can you imagine your first day on the job? And for Marty Brenneman, his first day as voice of the Reds was opening day in 1974, and Hank Aaron hit 714 that day.
Wow.
An incredible, incredible thing. So it was a little bit of an homage to both of those guys that have meant so much to me, both personally and professionally. So I did, I do confess, there was a little bit of that in there. My dad has Alzheimer's now and, you know, doesn't remember a lot, and wanted it to kind of be a little bit of a throwback to something that I know meant a lot to him. So usually the answer to that is absolutely not. But in that one case, there was a little bit in there that I had kind of been thinking about that day I wanted to do.
Well, knowing that it will live forever, how did you feel about your call of 895?
I really liked it. It's funny. You're never in a position. I always feel weird. You know, I mean, there are things that you do is like, okay, yeah, I think we nailed that one. We move on. But the ultimate judge isn't me. I mean, the ultimate judge is, you know, how it's received by the people who hear it. And I did hear from a lot of industry people and a lot of people that I know in this great game. And you know, you usually feel like, okay, I think that one lived up to the hype, lived up to the moment.
No, but it was great.
Ultimately, I don't think we picked that. I think whether you're Joe or whether you're me, we serve up the best we know how, and we hope that it resonates correctly. And you know, I think for both of us, I think we were both pretty happy with that.
It was great. I think you both nailed it. By the way, I just looked this up because I wasn't sure. 7:15, Hank Aaron in April of 74 was called actually two ways. It was called by NBC, which carried the game live, by the great Kurt Gowdy, who was the voice of the AFL on NBC during the 70s. He was the host of American Sportsman, which was this incredible show during the 70s and 80s. But it was also, John, called by Vin Scully, who was the Dodgers announcer, and they were playing the Dodgers when he hit 7:15.
Yeah,
two legends.
I mean, so you right. So national and a third, Milo Hamilton, and yes. There was, you know, so there were so many, and all three of the, I mean, just the best of the best of the best. Even, you know, for the teams, because, I mean, like ours, right? You've got Joe and you've got me, but you had Kenny Albert. You had Chris King on Islanders Radio. Right. So you had four different guys. But can you imagine having the star power and the magnitude of a call like that from the three guys you just said? I mean, it's staggering. Milo's was my favorite. That was the one that my dad liked the most. But you're right. I mean, having Vin Scully being able to call that from a it's not his team, right?
Right.
But that was kind of what Chris King with the Islanders got to do. And I talked with, when Chicago was in on Friday night, John Weideman does radio for the Hawks. And he said, listen, if it happens tonight, I said, I'm airing it out like it's the Stanley Cup. I said, I never thought I was going to be in a position to call this. He called 894. He got to call the one that you let off the segment with. But unfortunately, he didn't get that third one for the home folks. Otherwise, Johnny would have aired it out on Chicago radio, and that would have been fun, too.
By the way, you mentioning Marty Brenneman's name, I'm certainly familiar with Marty Brenneman, legendary Cincinnati guy. But, you know, around here, for a few years, not a long period of time, he did ACC basketball games.
He sure did, yeah.
Yeah, and he was
excellent. North Carolina native, too. I mean, he's an East Coaster birth. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, big basketball guy. He did the Pacers for a while in the NBA for, you know, select TV games for them. He did ABA in Norfolk. I mean, he was, you know, very much.
He did Virginia Squires games in Norfolk?
Sure did.
Wow.
That was, yeah, and he did, his last baseball job was Tidewater in Norfolk. So he was, there's a lot of Marty Brenneman folks down in Hampton Roads for sure. And then made the move to Cincinnati opening day 1974. And I worked with him. I was the PA announcer at Riverfront for 7 years, and I sat next to him. And I have never laughed harder in my life. He taught me so much about how I want my booth to be run. You know, we never take anything too seriously. My first day on the job, honestly, with the Reds, John McSherry, you might remember, home plate umpire, dropped dead on the field on opening day. That was my first day on the job.
So it
was crazy. And I always have kind of taken the attitude from there. It's like, look, if everybody lives to the end of the day, we're all right here. Like, I mean, happens in his job that is, it isn't fatal. So like let's move forward.
Exactly. That's not a bad attitude. You know, I don't know how big of a basketball fan you are, but you mentioning Norfolk, and they had an arena down there called the Scope, and the Virginia Squires played there, and the Virginia Squires had on the same team Dr. J and George the Iceman Gervin. They played together on the same ABA team in Virginia. That would have been probably the mid-70s, somewhere around there. Anyway, all right, let's talk hockey. So can you explain to me and to everybody listening why the odds makers don't like the Caps, you know, in this series and overall in the East and overall to win the Cup?
It's a great question, and I have, you know, old dog, new tricks. I try to pay attention to analytics and more modern numbers. We use more high danger chances. That's not a phrase that I have used in the broadcast until relatively recently in the last couple of years. There are things that can be quantified, and there are things that I just don't think can be. And the thing that I find very amusing about that in this series is that if you look at just straight analytics and Money Puck and all the websites, but I mean, you think the Caps shouldn't even show up. I mean, they have 67% chance of Carolina winning, which is ridiculous. I'm not saying Carolina isn't going to win the series. They certainly could. They're very good. But the Caps are very good. To me, this is very even or relatively even all the way down the middle from goal to defense to forwards. It's going to be a fantastic best of seven. I do find it interesting, and the guys who always know a little bit more and always seem to get it a lot more closer to the mark are the guys involving betting lines and things that involve money. It's funny. Those are much closer. They edge Carolina, but just a little bit.
You're preaching to the choir on those people knowing what they're talking about. But I just looked. I mean, Carolina's on average about a minus 180 favorite in this series.
Yeah, I mean, they are favored, and I think that part of it is that they're a good puck possession team, and when you look, I mean, the Caps beat them twice in the regular season. I mean, this is not, it's not like it was lopsided in the regular year when they met, and, you know, there was a lot of hostility when they were in Norfolk, and remember the game with all the penalty minutes in the third period. So there's a lot of spice. You've got two really good goalies here. The one thing that Carolina does really well is they generate momentum off of virtually nothing, and they will possess the puck a lot when things are going well. Now, when they've been in D.C., it has not been as pronounced because they don't have last change. The Capitals have had trouble this season in Raleigh at times because when you don't have last change, and it should be mentioned here when people are looking at, oh, what happened in the regular season, I don't know how much they weigh that. I have not had a dinner in Raleigh in 3 years. And the reason is that for each of the last two seasons, the Capitals have gone to Raleigh on a back-to-back. So they have played in D.C., and then they had to get on a plane, and they go there, and they don't have a morning skate. They haven't had a night in the hotel the night before, like a dinner, rest, morning skate, all the routine things that they would do. They haven't done it in 3 years. And I'm not saying that that's a huge thing, but it is a thing when you are continually getting a Carolina team, and every time Carolina at least had 2 days rest and the Caps had none. This series is going to be close. It is going to be long. I think it's at least six. The Capitals need to win their home games for sure, because winning in Raleigh is very difficult. But that's what you play for home ice for. And I think as long as the Caps hold serve, I think they're going to be fine.
John, I had this conversation last week with, I think, Joe B and Tarek and a few others. Getting through this first series after they hadn't won a series since 2018, I don't know if you felt the same way, but it's I sense that a lot of people that are really into the team and are close to the team felt like there was some pressure building to not, you know, come up short of expectations, which would have meant, you know, getting beat in the first round by Montreal. They had a great season, a memorable season because of Ovi. So I'm not suggesting that this is icing on the cake beyond the first round, but do you think they're playing with a little less pressure moving forward after, you know, getting through, and not only getting through impressively in five games?
You know, it's funny because if you look back over the last 15 years, and even in 2018, and we all remember Kuzi's goal against Pittsburgh, and we remember coming back from down 3-2 against Tampa Bay and winning in five against Vegas. But here's what sometimes maybe gets lost after 7 years. The Capitals trailed in every series.
Yeah.
They were down 0-2 to Columbus. They were down 2-1 to Pittsburgh at home. They were down 3-2 and looked like the dream was over against Tampa Bay, and they lost the first game against Vegas. They have remarkably this time, I talked to Tom Wilson about this a couple days ago, this remarkably was businesslike and really no drama. And the Caps historically have done nothing but drama. There was no drama here, and you were able to, and it was such a great feeling. And I even posted on X, Twitter, whatever we call it these days, the other night. I said, how great is it to be able to watch late round, first round games with your team already moved on? We haven't done that here ever. I mean, not my time. This is 14 years for me.
Right.
That's never happened. And it is, I think, a reflection of this coaching staff, these players, these vets, the new guys they've brought in, Logan Thompson for sure, to be able to say, look, we go out, we got a job to do. Montreal's a good team. And you know, the Caps were a better team. But at no point did the Caps, were you worried? I was never worried in that series. Like, I don't know if it's going to go five. I think they can finish this in five. And they did finish it in five. One bad game in game three, but corrected so well on the road and was just great at line matching, even when he didn't have last change, Spencer Carberry in Montreal. So I think that's what you're going to see in this series against Carolina. I think that, you know, they may win, they may lose, but I think this is the biggest test for this team. If they get by Carolina, I absolutely believe this team can go all the way. It's a matter of staying healthy and all of that. They match up. They did very well against Toronto this year. They did very well against Florida this year. They did very well against Edmonton. I mean, when you look at the teams on the other side, they won in Vegas in the regular season for the first time ever this year. So even the teams on the other side, they have generally fared well. They beat Dallas in October, which was a lifetime ago, but they have wins against everybody. There's no team they can't beat, but this will probably be their biggest test.
Yeah, the way you said that, there was never an opportunity for that feeling of dread and tension to sort of combine in a game six or a game seven. Now, the downside of it being over so quickly is we've had to wait nearly a week for game one, but it comes tonight. So tell me about the goalie matchup. You know, Logan Thompson playing at a very high level. Tell me about just the matchup between the two goaltenders in this series.
It's intriguing because both missed a little bit of time. Logan less because he left game three in the third period. And we thought when we didn't see him on the off day and Charlie Lindgren gave the long interview and they rope-a-doped us into thinking that Charlie was going to play. And then lo and behold, guess who comes out the morning of game four? Similar to that, Freddie Anderson got knocked out in game four, didn't finish the series. He is expected to go tonight. Freddie Anderson is a little fragile in terms of when he gets hurt, it seems like he gets hurt a lot, and he just can't stay healthy. Pyotr Kochetkov is our backup. He's very good, too. But when Anderson's been on his game, and boy, was he in the first round, gave New Jersey very little prior to injury. Kochetkov did enough to win and got him out of the first round in five games, too. They've had the same rest. Anderson should be good to go. Thompson gets a week here. Alexei Protas gets a week. Alex Ovechkin, old man week off is not terrible at 39, right? So right. I think there is some use, even though there could be some rust, and certainly that's a bit of a consideration for tonight. But both teams have it, so I don't know that, there could be a little bit of a feeling out, but generally, as much as these teams don't like each other, I think that's going to really, the adrenaline's going to kick in. These guys are going to get after it right away, both teams. But for the goalies, Logan was one of the very best in the first round, won all four games, looked really good doing it, especially in the last two, didn't give them much at all, really. And I thought when he was called upon, and there were times, third period in game one and game two, the Capitals ended up winning game one in overtime, game two, but had to hang on to do it. This was a very close series, and he was definitely the difference. He'll need to be the difference again, no doubt. But against Freddie Anderson, I don't expect a lot of goals in this series. But we'll see. I think both these teams, you negate the star power and you look at the Brandon Duhaime's and those guys. Duhaime was huge in getting three goals in the last two games of the series against Montreal. Those are the guys to look to, but I think both goalies are going to be as advertised here.
If we fast forwarded and I told you the Caps won this series in six or seven, other than outstanding goaltending, what would be the next biggest reason for them moving on?
Improved special teams. It was really one of the things, at least statistically. I know in talking with some of the guys in the room, I said, listen, yeah, they gave up five goals on a power play to Montreal, but it wasn't as bad as that indicated. And I said, okay, like I can buy that, but it still happened, and it can't happen, not against Carolina. And they are very good on the power play. So getting Alexei Protas back is huge for that. The penalty kill must rise to the occasion and really, first of all, don't give them a lot of chances, but when they're going to get some, make sure that you are killing as well as you know how and as well as you've done all year. And the power play, I thought, was okay. Ovechkin gets a couple of goals that way. They ended up with three. They were really quiet in the middle of the series on the power play. Better special teams on both sides of it. Not that they were horrendous, because they weren't, but statistically, you can't give these guys much. If you're giving them on special teams, if you lose the special teams battle, you will not win the series. I think even if it's close, even if it's even, that's okay. This team at 5-on-5 was dominant against Montreal, and I think they will do well at 5-on-5 against Carolina too. But don't open the door on special teams. Do that, and I think they're going to be okay.
Two quick ones to end. In watching against Montreal, I'm not a guy watching a lot of hockey during the regular season. What was obvious to me is the Caps were just bigger, more physical, and Montreal was sort of top-line dependent on scoring. What will I notice more than anything else when it comes to watching Carolina?
I think the physical part is, you think hitting and you think, lining guys up and blowing them up, and you'll see some of that. But what I'm looking for tonight is Pierre-Luc Dubois' line, who was just terrific in shutting down, the Caulfield line for the most part in the Montreal series. That line is going to get tasked. That's McMichael, that's Wilson, and that's Dubois. They're going to get a whole lot of Sebastian Aho and Andrei Svechnikov and Jackson Blake. That's their top line. They're very good. They're very skilled. They had an outstanding series against New Jersey. Devils just were blown out of the water by that line alone. Pierre-Luc Dubois only had two assists in the first round. He didn't have a goal. Makes zero difference to me, because maybe offense would be great, but the D-zone starts and what he was able to do defensively on that side of the puck to be able to limit those chances, limit those shots on goal. When you look up at the board tonight, you're looking for something to watch. Look where their shots on goal are at the end of the first period. If it's 15, that's a problem. If it's 6, that means things are going pretty well, and they're going to get their chances. But if the Dubois line is able to match and keep those guys to the outside, limit their multiple chances. They're a team that feeds off momentum, and when they don't have it, you can starve them out a little bit, especially when you have last change. But the shots are going to matter, because if they're getting those in-between-the-dots chances and following up with second opportunities, that means things are going poorly. But we didn't see a lot of that in the Montreal series, right, and hopefully that'll be the same here tonight.
All right, prediction?
Caps are going to win. It's going to go long. I really feel that this team is special. They did not get to the second round to fail. Carolina could easily beat them, and with the offense that they have and all the things I just said. But if Logan Thompson is a goalie that he was in the first round, if they get the offense that they have and they have gotten from guys like McMichael, now you get Protas back if he can contribute, if Ovechkin can continue to be able to get chances. I don't see this series going any less than six games. It's going to go long. There's going to be two trips to Raleigh here. You're going to have to withstand and maybe win a game on the road if you end up dropping one at home. Hopefully they don't. But I think in a long series, if you make the physical investment in the series early, make it hurt, and keep creating chances and be responsible defensively, Capitals can absolutely move on to the round of four.
I enjoyed this. Thanks. Have a great call tonight, John. Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yep. John Walton, everybody. When we come back, Tush Push appears to be in trouble again. More on that next.
All right, yesterday the Washington Nationals were rained out, so today they will re-rack and take on the Cleveland Guardians twice in a doubleheader right here on the Team 980. Pre-games with Charlie and Dave starts at 3:05. Two thrilling NBA finishes last night. The Knicks rallied from a 20-point deficit to beat the Boston Celtics in overtime 108-105. The Nuggets fought back and stole a win off the Oklahoma City Thunder. Jokic put up 42 points and 22 rebounds in the victory. Clemson and Notre Dame football programs have announced a home-and-home series set to begin in 2027, and the two football titans will face off through 2038. The series works independently of the ACC structure and does not count as one of Notre Dame's five ACC games. The Caps will finally take on the Carolina Hurricanes after nearly a week off. Logan Thompson expected to get the start pregame at 6:45 on 106.7 The Fan. John Walton is on the call. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.